Hey everybody, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from 6th Street. My name is Chuck.
I'm Jess.
And we have another special guest in the studio. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, yes. My name is Katerina Stoikova, and I'm so excited and I'm so thrilled to be here, on the radio today with Chuck and with Jess.
Yes.
We missed you.
I know. I miss not only you as a person in real life, but also your voice on the radio in Lexington.
Oh, that's wonderful. I would love to bring it back next year.
Sweet.
If you would have me.
We'll happily have you.
We're holding you to it.
Okay. Well, here it is. Public knowledge.
We'll bring snacks, if that's an incentive.
Yes.
So, Katerina, you do so many things here in not only Kentucky, but also in Bulgaria and all around the world. So, first of all, I just want to ask you, where were you born? Where are you from?
I was born in Burgas, Bulgaria, which is a beautiful coastal town, the biggest gulf on the Black Sea from Bulgarian side. And that is a town the size of Lexington. And I've been told that I learned how to walk on sand, by the beach.
Mm. Mm. And Burgas' nickname is the City of Poets, right?
That's right.
Wow, a little foreshadowing. Who'd have thought? What is your hometown like? What was growing up in Burgas like?
Well, it was during the communistic era, mm-hmm. that was in the 70s. I was born in 71. And I'm an only child. I had two very different parents and grandparents. One of my grandparents was a colonel in the communist army.
Mm.
And the other one was a type of a rebel who didn't eat meat.
Wow.
Who believed in God and who refused to vote. Yes.
Interesting.
Those three things, all of them I don't know how he wasn't picked up and sent to some camp, but and all three of them at the same time. He probably wasn't important enough.
Well, that's pretty awesome. So,
but for me, I didn't notice any of that. I had a normal childhood, or at least what I remembered as normal. There were many opportunities for children to go for free places to learn to write and to do a lot of arts. And since I was second grade, I remember that I went to all sorts of clubs and all sorts of places where I could learn to draw, work with clay, study journalism, and a lot of extracurricular places, and had great opportunities, and they were all free.
Wow.
Wow.
It's amazing. The benefits of, communism.
Yes. Well, one benefit that people don't know about, I'm not plugging communism by any way, shape, or form like something positive, but is that still, to this day, if a woman has a baby, she has 2 years paid leave.
Mm.
Wow, that would be really nice.
Yeah, Jess, what do you think about that? about hitting your second year of...
I wouldn't even be back to work yet.
You wouldn't be hosting the show, maybe. No, well, that's awesome. Well, so, Katerina, I wanted to ask you, who encouraged you to read and write growing up? What initially got you interested in poetry?
When I was second grade, I went to school like I go every day, and they brought a guest who was a poet. And I remember I was sitting there at the back of the classroom, and this man, whose name I do not remember, but I can picture him even now, he was telling us about poems, about poets, what poets do, and what does it mean to be a poet.
Mm.
And I don't really remember exactly what he said about being a poet, but I remember recognizing him. I remember my heart recognizing and falling in love with that. And then I went home that same day and I told my mother, "Mom, I'm going to be a poet." And she said, "Okay." And then I turned around, went in my room and wrote my first poem.
Wow. Do you remember what it was about?
Probably about my country or something. But I remember my second poem, which was, you know, a poem praising the political leader. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like growing up in that socialist government, you know, has influenced your writing in quite a way, or at least your thought structure?
Well, I think that the thought structure, yes. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, we were, let's say, brainwashed to think about the community mm-hmm. over the individual, mm-hmm. Which, you know, it's not a bad thing to have a little portion of your head thinking about the community.
Definitely.
And where are we now in the Lexington Community mm-hmm. Radio? Why is that? Because community is important.
Sure.
But so is all of our individuality.
Yes,
right?
But where can the individual thrive?
Yeah, within the community. Only within the community, you know?
Right.
You got to have great audience. Great poets need great audiences, mm-hmm. you know? Otherwise, you're just, it's on a piece of paper somewhere, you know?
And about my writing was influenced by the writing at the time. Mm. And what you read influences your writing. There is no way around it. But how much that has influenced me, I didn't understand until a lot later when I understood. Because people ask me, are you Bulgarian poet? Are you American poet? I didn't really have a really good answer until one day I realized that actually I'm a Bulgarian poet. Mm-hmm. And that is because I read a lot of bad Bulgarian poetry, and I said, I write just like that, you know, whenever I write a bad mm-hmm. poem, because everybody writes bad poems.
Definitely, yeah. I love that.
I do.
So Katarina, I remember you told me once, I think we had this conversation at a holler, and I really love this juxtaposition, because I know your poem, really your whole book about the air around the butterfly, but you also told me that you could completely disassemble and assemble like a Kalashnikov rifle. Is that right?
Yes. I was able to, because that was part of the mandatory curriculum in high school.
So I just remember always thinking, like, Katarina is so tender, but also super powerful. And I always thinking of that next to the air around the butterfly, but also you disassembling a Kalashnikov rifle.
Yeah, I haven't done that since I was like 16 or 17 years old, so mm-hmm. I'll probably have quite trouble if you bring me one right now. But there was time limit to it, 17 seconds. That's what you had to do it.
Wow. So when you were in Bulgaria, where did you study, and what did you major in?
In my high school was specialized high school, and I was studying architecture. It was an architecture school that you could get like some kind of vocation with it. And that's what I did at the time. So when I graduated at 19. I studied 1 year more, and I had an associate degree with some skill with, you know, architecture and building. Mm-hmm. After that, I studied electrical engineering in Free University of Burgas. Free is in freedom. No, free is in no money to mm-hmm. pay for the university, because by that time, you know, the democracy had kicked in. Mm-hmm. So we had to pay for everything.
Yeah. Hopefully yeah.
You just missed it.
Yeah, hopefully the student loan operators hadn't gotten there at that point.
No. And then when I immigrated to the United States, I studied, I got master's in computer science from University of Rochester, RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology, mm-hmm. and then worked in IBM as a programmer and software engineer. Then at some point I decided that I want to really, you know, go in management and take over the world in a big way. And I went to get what? An MBA.
Yes.
In Virginia Tech. And when I got out of Virginia Tech, what did I do then? Then I came to Lexington and started working in Lexmark. And at that point, I wanted to be the CEO of Lexmark because...
You would have been a good CEO.
Yeah.
Well, I think so.
I think so, too.
For about 5 minutes. And then out here, really, you know, I don't know. But I really wanted to be a CEO, the CEO. And there was some urgency to it because I wanted to, I don't know, to be the youngest CEO and look good in pictures, you know, in Fortune...
Fortune 500 magazines.
Yes. Yeah. And I decided to speed the process. And, okay, so I'll admit that publicly. I went to audition for a certain show.
Oh, yeah. Can we ask what show?
Yes. The Apprentice.
Oh.
that was gonna be my guess, but I just couldn't get the word off my tongue.
How was your audition on The Apprentice? How'd it go?
I don't think I did so great, but it was an experience because the audition was in Louisville, in some big radio station in Louisville, and there was a long line of people who wanted to audition. And I was there, you know, I thought that I'll be walking in immediately, and I was with high heels, silk stockings, and it was very, very cold. So I was quite uncomfortable all the way until the audition. And the audition, the lady who just, you know, picks up like 6-7 people and puts us in around the table and has us to argue about a controversial question. And the controversial question was, do you need education to be successful or not?
Wow.
That was...
That's a foreshadowing.
I know, right? I don't even know how to process that right now.
Wow, that's deep, Katerina. I mean, you're always deep, but that's deep.
True story, you know, not making any of that stuff up.
Well, that's amazing. Well, wow. You know, I'm selfishly glad that it didn't work out and you didn't become the CEO, because then you wouldn't have become the poet that you are today.
Well, I probably wouldn't have met you.
That's true.
That is true, yeah. I'm really glad that things worked out the way they worked out.
Yeah.
All dreams come true, though.
I think so, yeah. So Katerina, you went from being a software engineer... and I remember you were telling me that you just decided one day, you know, this isn't the world for me. In fact, I remember you told me this quote that stuck with me. You said, they're not feeding you the way that you need to be fed.
Yeah.
And it really resonated. So what made you want to go to poetry from software engineering?
It woke up in me. And for everybody who writes poetry knows that poetry can... integrate you back. It can glue you back together in a way that nothing else, for me, in my experience, and those who write poetry know that this... and there is also some kind of physical pleasure and peace after you write something that you like. If you write something that you don't like, there is, you know, it doesn't work that way. But that is when you have just really stuck your hand inside and pulled something, a fistful of truth that you didn't know before. So if you surprise yourself with a poem, then there is that, that is help, personal help for yourself like no other. And I think that after 11 years in the corporate world, I needed a lot of help.
Yeah, undoing. You know, exhaling a little
bit. That's right, yeah.
Do you think the engineering background, your short poems, efficient is not the right word because they evoke so much emotion and they're so beautiful, but efficient in how much you capture in such a little amount of space. Does that have anything you think to do with the process of engineering, how to be the most efficient, how to be the most effective? Did that translate to your writing?
First of all, I love the word efficient. I don't see anything wrong with calling poems efficient. Because they're vehicles of emotion, vehicles of energy, and the translation. You know, the poet says, well, I have this thing in mind. Oh, and how do I translate this so I can give it to somebody else? So efficient is great. So I think that working in software helped me write the way I write because I did consider writing poems. Because there was also something very profound in making something that works and using a language, a computer language, and using its form very, very much like poetry. However, a poet friend of mine who had seen my work before I immigrated saw my later work and said, wow, this is you, this is your voice. So maybe my writing poetry influenced my writing code.
Interesting.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, what was first, right?
Yeah, chicken or the egg. Mm-hmm. The chicken or the program that makes eggs. You know, that's pretty awesome. So after you got into poetry, you got your MFA from Spalding University, right?
That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about Spalding University for folks that don't know about their creative writing MFA program?
Spalding MFA changed my life in so many ways and gave me the tools to tell my story and taught me a lot about craft and a lot about persistence and a lot of how one can be successful by watching other people and by having fantastic mentors and by working on my own schedule. Spalding University is located in Louisville, as you may know, and they work with you to graduate in the time that works for you. Basically, you can take only one semester a year and work slower, or you can take two semesters a year and work, graduate in 2 years. So the important thing to know is that they meet you where you are and they help you make the best of your talent.
Mm. Mm. And it seems like so many Kentuckians have gone through Spalding, and Spalding has uplifted so many voices that we know.
Yeah, you know? I'm just ticking them off in my head. Thank goodness for Spalding. I feel like it really showcased how the talent of the state in a way we hadn't seen in them. A long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, and the word that you said, uplifted, is very important here, because this is the thing that I probably the most important thing to say is that everybody felt hurt and nurtured, and there was no bickering, envying, or competition. Everybody tried to help everybody else,
and it's sustaining. You know, you look at the writers today, the ones that I'm fortunate enough to meet through the Carnegie Center, and the way that writers prop each other up and that community is just it's remarkable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. So I'm happy you did it. And so, Katerina, can we talk a little bit about your books?
Yes.
So your first book was published in 2009, mm-hmm. The Air Around the Butterfly, and Facul Express
That's
is who
right.
put that out. And it's bilingual as
yes.
well. So can you kind of tell us about that process and how long it took you to write this?
I wrote this book almost entirely while I was in Spalding. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take that long to write it. I hadn't written for 11 years. That was when I was in the corporate world. And then when I quit and I started writing full-time and studying full-time, it just happened very quickly. By the time I graduated, the book was published. I had written most of it in English because people say, and I agree, that you write in the language that you're loved in.
Mm-hmm.
You write in the language that people will read you. And that's what happened with this book. But my publisher was in Bulgaria, and I was able to translate the poems and arrange them in the way that I liked.
Mm.
So that was the first one.
Do you find that there are some phrases in Bulgarian that don't translate to English directly?
Absolutely,
yeah. Well, can you give us an example of some of them?
There is a poem there which is called, if I remember correctly, My Personality Unfolding Before You Like a Swiss Army Knife.
Mm.
And I could not translate it in the same way in Bulgarian, so I translated it as My Personality Unfolding Before You Like a Pocket Knife.
Mm.
Now there is difference there. I mean, emotionally, practically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
functionally.
Functionally,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
My personality unfolds as a little scissor, you know, helpful, mm-hmm. or just as a knife, right? So there were three kinds of reviews of that book that came out. Mm-hmm. One by people who read it just in English, one for people who read it just in Bulgarian, and all different kinds of reviews by the people who focused on the differences.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's interesting. We're most positive.
Yeah.
Most good.
Yeah, excellent. Or at least that's the only ones that I encountered.
Well, I enjoyed it. I liked it.
I did. Too.
Obviously, didn't read it in Bulgarian, but.
Thank you.
So, Katerina, do you feel like, and I just know this kind of also from speaking Japanese, but do you feel like you're a different person in another language? Because there's so many words and so many, especially English, which has so many different words from other languages combined, where you can explain things in such excruciating detail. But I feel like, you know, maybe with Bulgarian, it's not as I don't know, complicated. It's not as complex as how descriptive you can get as you can get in English. So do you feel like your voice in Bulgarian is different than your voice in English a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. A little bit. It's different. But I think that less and less I feel like a different person. Mm. Because I feel like I'm more and more integrated.
Yeah.
And that journey towards wholeness has been one of the big journeys in my life, maybe in everybody's life, but for an immigrant that is very well established and very visible.
Mm.
That you gotta, if you want to be one person, then you have to integrate those two parts of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my American part and my Bulgarian part.
True. So let's talk about your second book, Porcupine of the Mind. Can mm-hmm. you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is my second book in English, The Porcupine of Mind, and it was published in America in English by Broadstone Books, which mm-hmm. is a Kentucky press. Fantastic press. We owe them a debt of gratitude because they publish a lot of Kentucky poets, and not only Kentucky poets, a lot of world poets as well. And the owner of the press, Larry Moore, he also curates art, mm-hmm. local art as well.
And they're based out of Frankfurt, right?
They are based mm-hmm. in Frankfurt, yes.
So, capital city.
That's right. Yeah.
Did you prefer publishing with a Bulgarian publisher over an English publisher? Did you find that experience to be different?
That's a good question.
Yes, the experience was different, but I also have had experiences from, you know, between Bulgarian presses and American presses. So, quite honestly, there is difference from press to press.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
that's what I found.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I noticed from your first book where you published Bulgarian and English together.
Yeah.
But with Porcupine of the Mind, you kind of separated it and you published it in Bulgarian with a different name, right? Invisible Number.
Yes, that's what the book it looks like here. If cool. you guys can see it.
It looks really cool.
It's very nice.
It's a lot of Cyrillic letters on the front of it. It's right. A nice beige.
Right. So they look completely different. But yes, I wanted, the first one, I wanted, my goal was people to hear that I published a book. You know, mm. I never thought, well, I want to sell that many books or I want so many. Mm. I wanted everybody that knows me to know that finally, you know, I had published a book. So that was my goal in America. That was my goal in Bulgaria. And that worked reasonably well because I worked very hard to make sure that happened. After that, I wanted to make the best possible book in Bulgarian and the best possible book in English. And that's what I tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to say that there will be a new one coming
Please,
out?
Please, we would love okay. to know about that.
Okay.
Do you have a title for it already?
Yes. The title is the same as the title of the book who won the Ivan Nikolov National Book Award in 2014. So the title is How God Punishes.
Wow.
Which, you know, really sounds worse than it is. because in the book, no punishment is mentioned, nor God, actually. Mm. So this is the book in Bulgarian.
Wow.
I love the cover.
So has that already been published in Bulgaria?
This was published in 2014.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I had prepared the book in English, too.
Cool. Do you have any pieces from it that you might be interested in reading?
Yes, I would love to read a little bit from it.
Yeah, we would love to. Yeah, I would love to hear. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear some of it for sure.
Me too. Okay. The whole book is made of little or brief poems, and every one of those little poems refers back to the title, How God Punishes. And by the way, I'm expecting it to come out early next year from Broadstone Books as well.
Cool.
Great.
Yeah, I'm very excited for it. So let's say I'll read to you the first part, which is called How God Punishes. Gives you the small prize. Mercifully, you never learn of the big one. Erases the questions. Only answers remain. This is wrong. Don't do that. You can't change anything. Teaches you to not see what you don't want to see. Forces you to live with people like you. Rewards you for doing what's easy. Gives you strength to make promises and nothing further. Makes you help those who don't need any help, then those who don't want any help, then those who don't want your help, then those you don't want to help, then lets you stop helping. You wait to be thanked. A. The thank you arrives. B. The thank you doesn't arrive. C. The thank you arrives because you wait. You fear you work hard, but you'll get no reward. Or, God forbid, you did get a reward, but didn't notice.
Wow. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's great, Katarina. I love your work because it's what was the word that you used? Yeah.
Efficient.
Efficient. It's very efficient. It's like, here's a universal truth. We're going to get to it. And we're not going to load it up with flowery language or to get convoluted with too many adjectives. Mm-hmm. And it's very to the point.
The spectrum of emotions it covers is so vast.
Yeah.
Which is why I always think of your poems with great efficiency.
Oh, thank you so much.
I feel so much, but it takes up such little of my time.
Exactly.
Yeah, you could tweet that, I guess.
Yeah, well, you even did the compilation with accents, right? Of short poem, anthology of short poems.
Yes, and I want to do that again because I've been thinking that this was so much fun, not only to compile, but to read from. And we had this big show, you know, that we had, there are about 300 poems, and 350 poems from 190 poets. And it turned out that a lot of them wanted to come for a premiere reading, and everybody came and read their own poems and their favorite poem by somebody else. And it's fun to read from. It's fun to read, and I want to do another one.
And that came out in Accents Publishing,
yes,
right? And
yes.
What was the limitation? How long could the poem be?
50 words, including the title.
Wow. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I loved going through it. It was great. And it was something that I could, you know, during my busy day, I could take a few minutes and calm myself and get lost in a little poetry.
And you couldn't read just one, that's for sure.
Exactly, yeah.
And they stay with you, though, too. You know, you think you read them so quickly, yet they never really... It occupies your mind much longer than it takes you to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted those who are complete by themselves, world by themselves, and, you know, they're just like this burst into the reader, and then the reader can, you know, collect a lot from it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of accents, you know, let's talk a little bit about accents.
Sure.
So first of all, I just want to talk about the Accents radio show that you hosted on WRFL 88.1. For a long time, which
6 years.
Was amazing.
It was
and
the best.
Yeah,
thank you.
It was just a nice, like a calm in the middle of a crazy day. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed listening to it and listening to it from abroad as well. And those are still up on your website, right?
Yes.
If people want to check them out, where can people go to listen to those archives?
KaterinaKlemmer.com, I think it's /radio, but, you know, either from the... there's got to be a button on the site that you can go to the archive.
Yeah.
And there, I don't know, quite a few, at least 300.
Wow. One of those was a young upstart poet named Chuck Clinton.
I know, it was a fun show.
Just getting started, you know.
Yeah. I think I was on a couple as a Carnegie spokesperson.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was amazing because, I think what you did is really tell the story of this burgeoning poetry scene that was happening at the time, you know, with Holler, with Poesia, with all of these different movements that were happening. But you also brought it on a national level. You know, I think when folks were coming in, like I know you had Charles Simic on, you know, these... phenomenal, like huge names to come through as well, and not only, you know, let their voice be heard and tell our story as a city, but also to like showcase Lexington as a spot that gets it and appreciates poetry.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mentioning Howard, I guess Eric was my second guest ever. Yeah, and the first was Colin Watkins, you know, that singer-songwriter, funny man, who right now lives in Alaska.
Wow.
That's great. So in 2010, you started Accents Publishing.
That's right.
Now, what made you want to start your own press?
Oh, I really didn't, but...
Masochism.
Well, I don't know if it has happened to you guys, but... several things in my life have happened in that way, which is, you know, I'm just sitting and then all of a sudden I say, no, I don't want to do that. Mm. I don't hear myself saying, I want to do that, but I hear myself, no, I don't want to do that. Are you crazy? I mean, what are you thinking? But after several times of doing that, saying that to myself, I understood that actually I really want to do that, and my path goes through owning and operating a press, which I loved,
And was out of your family room, right?
That's right. The dining room still has all the printers and all the equipment and all the paper and some of the inventory.
There's something so romantic to me about a press out of your home. Mm-hmm. And kind of communist.
It's like a home. It's like a home cooked meal.
That's right.
You know, you can't get that in a restaurant.
That's right.
Something you do, like, I don't know, in private, no one's watching. It's like your lair where you go to.
Charlie Hughes, the owner of Winds, he came to be interviewed. I also recorded some of the Accents radio shows there sometimes. Mm-hmm. Had all sorts of mics, and he came there to bring one of his authors, and so we did a joint interview there to pre-record, and then months later he says, listen, I meant to ask you this, that place we went to, do you actually live there? So neither one of you have come over.
I haven't been there.
No, I just remember one day you showed up at the Carnegie and you had a stack of chapbooks, and you had told me you'd stayed up all night in your family room and your living room putting them together.
Right.
And it's an image that just has always stayed with me.
That's incredible. So, Katerina, how many books have been published through Accents?
About 50, maybe a little more, plus minus. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of those, you know, much like your radio show, you know, are Lexington poets or Kentucky poets.
Right.
Again, uplifting poets. You know, I think there's so many folks and so many books that I read off of Accents that I absolutely loved, and I don't think would have happened had you not told yourself, okay, I got to do this. I need to make this press happen.
Yeah, it wasn't optional because you would have been denying my heart's desire, my true heart's desire. Mm-hmm. You know, and your true heart's desire are not always convenient or easy to take care of, but I couldn't deny that.
That is true. That is true. Well, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you listened
to me. Me too. Yes, me too. It was one of the most important things that I think I've done.
Yeah, what do you think is some of the hardest parts of running your own press? or a small press?
The overhead. Mm. The overhead, because, yeah. You publish a book, but then you have to do a lot of things that surround that, and not only the year of, but 5 years after that.
Mm.
And I guess the word that comes to mind is maintenance. Probably not the right word, but the programmer in me.
Mm.
Support. That's the word. Support.
Support.
Yeah.
So how was the reception of the books that you put out on Accents? Like, have you been contacted by people who found those books and were moved by them?
Yeah, I have. And that always feels very positive. And whenever we went to, events and shows and festivals and brought our books, there will be so many people who would say, oh, I have read, this and this and this and this, or, oh, I buy all Accents books. Nice. And the Morris Bookshop, they had a whole shelf with mm-hmm. Accents books, which was really, really wonderful to have them and to have their support.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's phenomenal. And, Accents also started the Lexington Poetry Month, which is a big thing that goes on every year. So how did that come about?
Well, I don't know if you've heard of Tupelo Press. Mm-hmm. Tupelo Press does this 30-30, 30 poems in 30 days. And I had signed up for that, and I wrote 30 poems in 30 days. Which was January, I think it was January 2013. And then at the Holler Poet Series, I was waiting in line to give Erica a hug. And then I was sitting by Hap Houlihan, and we were talking. And I told him that I had done this Tupelo 30-30. And then the two of us cooked up Lexington Poetry Month right there while we were right there before we gave Eric Sutherland a hug.
that's great.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Just changing the world while you're waiting.
And then that was March, June, and that was Hap's idea. He says, well, let's be contrary. Let's not do it in April. Let's do it in June.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Bronson O'Quinn post manually every single poem. That was the first year.
Wow.
Mm. And then after that, he programmed and interfaced, and Chris McCurry. So both Bronson and Chris were editors at Accents, and they are still editors at Accents. And then this year, we decided that it's best that Lexington Poetry Month graduates to something independent and lives on its own website.
Mm-hmm. And so for folks that don't know, anyone can participate, right? Anyone can go and sign up?
Yes, lexpomo.com, I think it is the website. It should give all the information on how to sign up. You have to sign up before June, and during June, you commit to write to attempt to write one poem a day during the month of June. Mm-hmm. And then you can post and share in the fellowship of everybody writing. It is really exciting. And some really good poems come out of that. And traditionally, but not mandatory, there is a book that gets published.
Mm. And that's, I think, for folks who publish at least 5 throughout the month. So you don't have to do all 30 to get included in the anthology.
That's right. And I want to say that Chris curates the book.
Mm. Yeah, and some of those have been awesome. It's been a lot of fun through, because it's so many different voices.
Yeah.
It's very open-ended, so, mm-hmm. It's a grab bag of what the content could be about. I appreciate that.
And so many people say, I've never written poetry, but I think this will be fun. And people in families do that, father and sons and mothers and daughters. They just sign up together. And here is some really wonderful, creative, month-long activity that you can share with your child.
Mm.
To write together.
Yeah, Lexington Poetry Month, lexpomo.com.
Yes.
Get involved next year. So, Katerina, I wanted to ask you about, since you're translating Bulgarian, and, obviously you won the Bulgarian National Book Award, so, I know that you're reading Bulgarian poetry and English poetry, but are there a lot of Bulgarian poetry books in English? Just in general?
No. In general, there aren't too many, especially if you're asking about poetry, there aren't too many. There are more prose books because of the Elizabeth Kostova Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Kostova, you may have heard of her. She wrote The Historian, which she sold for millions of dollars and it got published, and then she has several other novels after that. So The Historian was about Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, she put portion of the money in perpetuity to support Bulgarian literature. So she has yearly writing seminars in Suzopol, a beautiful coastal town, and anybody can submit work to be considered. It's fiction. And then they translate every year one or two titles. And they have been doing that for a while. There is an interview with her on the Accents Archive, too. She talks about it.
That's pretty awesome. And so, is that kind of lack of that, is that what really motivated you to want to put together a compilation of Bulgarian, contemporary Bulgarian poetry, which is called The Season of Delicate Hunger?
My love for translating and a little bit, I guess, it was foolish for me to think that I can do that, thinking about it, I wouldn't do it again, because it took about 2 years of very hard work and so much anxiety whether I'll be able to manage or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately it turned out to be a very nice book. And why I did it because I love translating, I love reading, and I love, I think that the Bulgarian voice should be heard, or at least there should be an opportunity to be heard. I wanted, several dozen alive, currently working Bulgarian poets to have their voice in English.
Mm.
And that did happen, and the objective was achieved, and the book was very well received.
Well, you translated 29 of the 32 poems, right?
Yes.
So that's a phenomenal task just in its own right. As far as like gender representation, is it mostly men?
Yeah, see, now that was one reason I wanted to do this. Thank you.
No problem.
Because I looked at everything else that has been published, and there would be, 30 men and 2 women,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. And then when I... Basically, after I put the book together, I counted, and they were pretty much 50-50,
mm-hmm.
Gender representation.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That it you gotta actually uplift happened, them. Yeah.
And again, empowering the voices of Bulgarian female poets.
That's right.
Your whole life is just filled with empowerment.
Oh, wow, well, thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Well, you make me feel really good about myself.
Yeah, that's what we do. This is more of a therapy session in our radio show.
Oh, what a gift. Thank you.
So when you're translating, because I've tried to translate before, and it's really difficult because sometimes you're not exactly sure, and poetry is kind of purposefully vague in certain ways to leave you with a certain feeling or a certain texture. So did you have to work with the poets to kind of figure out what some of them were talking about in Bulgarian so that you could accurately translate them in English?
Here and there, yes, I had to. Mm. But, everyone is represented with, 5 to 10 poems or a chunk of the book. And I was, to select those poems, I read a lot. Sometimes I had to read 2-3 books, hundreds of pages to select those 5 poems,
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to make sure that I do a really good job translating those poems. I didn't want them to sound as like translations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was some of the feedback that I got, that none of the poems sound like translations.
That's amazing. Well, it sounds like a job well done. And so this compilation, The Season of Delicate Hunger, is a compilation of contemporary Bulgarian poetry.
That's right.
And do you feel like the Bulgarian voice or poetry in general in Bulgaria has changed since the Soviet era and its own texture?
Oh, yeah. I mean, ton of poet freeloaders disappeared virtually overnight. I mean, there were those who just wrote political praise and had jobs, had really good jobs, mm-hmm. you know, publish a book a year praising the party and you know, you got good life yeah. going on. And you're promoted everywhere. And they disappeared.
Mm.
And then a lot of angry poetry started popping up.
Mm.
Mm. And a lot of dissidents, such as Konstantin Pavlov, for example. Now, he has been translated in English and has a really wonderful book in English. Some people who have been writing dangerous poetry during the 45 years or parts of that and were forbidden.
Mm.
And then they started being allowed to be published and to be read and got their due. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Got their due. Some of them didn't quite make it. Some of them...
yeah, didn't make it.
Yeah.
Do you think when you were translating, you had mentioned earlier that you finally feel like you're integrated as both a Bulgarian and an American? So when you're translating, do you think that helped, that maybe now, like, your mind is, you can kind of flow back effortlessly?
I'm not sure if I'm fully integrated. I'm a lot more integrated. But yes, understanding both languages and both cultures help me understand the poetry better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to mention something that Juček said about languages that just occurred to me, is that Wittgenstein says the limits of my language are the limits of my world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like, you know, my world pretty well hugs both sides of the ocean right now.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Yeah. It's like seeing a different... I always describe it as seeing another spectrum of color. You know,
yes.
Of like, if you've got 12 words for snow,
yeah,
you know, right. You're going to look at snow a lot different than I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be light or fluffy or thick or sparse. So, Katerina, just in the last few minutes that we have, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, winning the Ivan Nikolov National Poetry Book Award. You know, when did you find out that you won that? And has your life changed since you won it? I mean, that's basically the National Book Award of Bulgaria, right?
Yes. It is the biggest poetry prize, the most...
well, first of all, congratulations.
Oh, thank you,
that's
thank
amazing.
You. Yeah.
That is.
And who'd have thought? You just wanted to publish a book so people knew that you published a book.
That's right.
And then two books later, you win the National Book Award.
It was
amazing.
It was something that... well, I would be lying if I said that I didn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that many people liked this book, and I knew that it was received differently than anything else I had written before, and I was very happy. I was very happy mostly for the book, because I wasn't there. I wasn't in Bulgaria to stand behind my own book and to promote it. And anybody who is a poet, anybody who has published a book knows that you need to be behind your book, mm-hmm. because the book is a lot stronger with you behind it. That's the truth, for yeah. good or for better or worse. That's how it is. And I wasn't there, and the book is published. So, but winning, being nominated, first of all, and then a month later, winning, that helped give the book visibility. And we were able, and a lot more people were able to get to it and to read it.
Wow, that's fascinating. And you just came back from teaching in Bulgaria.
Yes, right? Yes, and that was fun. But to tell you how that changed my life, I kind of, I guess, disappeared a little bit from the literary life after winning that award, because I guess I wanted to write something else
mm-hmm.
next. And hid from public eye.
I understand. Before it, you know, before the paparazzi showed up.
Oh, no, none of that. How big of a celebrity do you think you are if you win a poetry award?
I don't know. Here you're pretty big.
I feel like it's a big deal.
Yeah. What was the reaction in Bulgaria? I mean, when you went back, when you went home, you know, because it seemed like they invited you to come back to teach, right?
Yes, although the teaching is a different thing.
Yeah,
the different thing. I was still congratulated by people who hear about literary awards. No, not everybody hears about literary awards either.
That's true.
So it's pretty normal.
And you'll be teaching, for those people who do get a kick out of literary awards, you're teaching this weekend.
I'm teaching tomorrow.
Tomorrow, that's right.
Tomorrow I'm teaching a class at the Carnegie Center, and that is on writing like an immigrant.
So the title, Writing Like an Immigrant, do you feel in this half, this kind of pseudo-integrated world that you live in, do you feel like you write like an immigrant in Bulgarian and you write like an immigrant in English?
Wow. I wrote a lot more sad immigrating poems before I started spending more time in Bulgaria. You know, before I found my balance.
Mm-hmm.
After I found my balance, I stopped. But immigration is a lot about seeing old world in a new way or seeing new world in an old way.
Mm.
And about comparison and about loss and about many other things that I want to talk about tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
That when I was thinking what could I offer, this topic came and wouldn't go away. And so that was another thing, like, well, I'm going to have to talk about immigrant boys and give examples. Do you think I can read a poem?
Please, we would love that.
Not mine, but I want to read from an immigrant poem we mentioned a little bit earlier, Charles Simic. I want to read you the poem, The Big War, which is from 60 poems. The Big War. We played war during the war, Margaret. Toy soldiers were in big demand, the kind made from clay. The lead ones, they melted into bullets, I suppose. You never saw anything as beautiful as those clay regiments. I used to lie on the floor for hours, staring them in the eye. I remember them staring back at me in wonder. How strange they must have felt, standing stiffly at attention before a large, incomprehending creature with a mustache made of milk. In time they broke, or I broke them on purpose. There was wire inside their limbs, inside their chests, but nothing in the heads, Margaret, I made sure. Nothing at all in the heads. Just an arm, now and then an officer's arm, wielding a saber from a crack in my deaf grandmother's kitchen floor.
Wow. Charles Simic.
That's right.
It's amazing. Katarina,
you go ahead.
No, after you, I insist.
I was just going to say, so in the class tomorrow, this is kind of like, are you going to give examples of writers who have come from an immigrant perspective?
That's exactly right. And I want to, I have curated some of my favorite poems, and I would like us to talk about them, to pick out the craft, and to see what makes a voice an immigrant voice. I have a list of about 30 points that makes, in my opinion, voice an immigrant voice, but also I have about 12 stages of immigrating by yours truly, you know.
Straight from the horse's mouth.
That's right.
Well, so Katarina, you know, I think we'd be remiss to also not mention Proud Citizen, since we're talking about immigrants and the immigrant experience. You wrote a movie with local director Tom Sutherland called Proud Citizen.
That's right. We did co-write that film, and I acted in it. That was my first acting experience, and the second acting experience was in Fort Maria. We just wrapped up the acting of it with the same Tom Sutherland and Cagney Gentry are the co-directors of that. I'm looking forward to this one as well.
Yeah, and Proud Citizen's all about, I mean, it's a slightly autobiographical. It's about a Bulgarian playwright who wins a contest to come to Lexington, Kentucky.
Second place.
Yeah. Oh, it's second place, so that's why they end up in Lexington. That's right. Is that autobiographical? No, I'm just kidding.
No, never written a play.
So basically, you know, the character kind of comes to Lexington and expects a warm welcome, and it's not so welcoming. So do you feel like that was kind of similar to your immigrant experience here?
Well, here is one of the reasons that I think America is a great country. Mm. That never have I felt a second-class citizen. Never have I felt unwelcome because I'm an immigrant. And people who I've experienced people for 20-some years here already, so I have some experience, right? Mm-hmm. And people ask people, where are you from? And then, doesn't matter where you are, most people say, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I could say that I'm from Switzerland. Oh, cool. I'm from France. Oh, how interesting. Or I'm from Bulgaria. Just as interesting. So there is no snobism or unwelcoming based on where I come from, and to me that was so wonderful and refreshing and welcoming, and that's how I was able to eventually drop my own prejudices, which I came with a truckload of. And I feel like I can truly say that I'm a better person because I have lived in America.
And I think we're a better country because you've lived here too.
Yeah, I would second that.
And wow. Uplifted, yeah. Empowered. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Katerina.
Thank you.
So we really appreciate you taking your time and your busy schedule to come in and chat with us and talk about poetry and all the great things that you've done over the years. And thank you for inspiring me and inspiring so many other people to keep writing.
Wow, thank you so much. It's been a privilege.
That's great. Well, nonetheless, I'm Chuck.
I'm Jess.
And we'll be back next week for another episode of Bluegrass Bios. But until then, have a great weekend, and we'll see y'all then. Until then, here's Rice-A-Roni University is up next. How do you say goodbye in Bulgarian?
До виждане.